Murphy's Auto Service Centers. They've got 16 locations. It'd be a nice thing to give for the holidays. And it's not too late to give the gift of Bucky's. That's the peace of mind that comes to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. And they're probably coming up this year. We'll be able to say they've been around for 50 years. Thank you, Bucky's. You know, I gave an unusual Christmas gift. I gave a carpet cleaning. You know, Zero Res that Ursula talks about all the time? I gave somebody that for Christmas.
John, so what were you telling them subconsciously?
Oh, crap, I didn't think about that. Didn't even cross my mind. And now I realize how horrible that is as a gift. I mean, it's a good gift you should give yourself, but not when somebody else gives it to you.
Well, John, us Pope folks, we do the best we can.
Tomorrow, they're coming in at 10 o'clock. They're coming down. Zero Res will be in there in the house. Boy, now I really think about it. You know, I watched the Mr. Rogers movie again, and it ends with him talking about being kind and loving, and I thought to myself, should I be more like that? Jacob, should I be more like that? I just watched the movie, and then it came out of the movie. I was watching it, and then Mr. Rogers talked about the world would be better if we were all kinder.
No, but why wouldn't you be kinder?
Exactly.
Just generally, I don't think I come off as necessarily a kind person.
I don't think you come off as being sincere.
I think I would rather be considered unkind than insincere. Of those two?
Okay.
Yeah, you're like, he's unkind. Yeah, but at least he's sincere about it, right? At least you know where he's going.
Okay.
All right, let's see. The guy was sitting in the left-hand... Wait, we don't have sound on this. So he is in... Is it two turning lanes? Two turning lanes to go left, right? Okay.
Left, yeah.
So he's sitting there in the one turning lane, the inside turning lane, and he's minding his own business, allowing the alcohol to be processed through his liver. He's three times legally drunk. And the police see him not with his turn signal on, also known as an indicator. And as he makes the left-hand turn, they throw the lights on and they catch him. And he says, hey, when he looks at it later on, you didn't have to pull me over. I didn't have to have my signal on. But the cops said to him, we pulled you over because you didn't signal you were in the left-hand lane. It would seem like if you're in the left-hand lane, you don't need the signal.
Exactly. And I would think the same thing.
Right.
I mean, my son is driving now.
Okay.
And that's one of the things he gets on me all over. Dad, your signal's not on. I'm like, I'm in a left-hand turn or the mm-hmm. right-hand turn. But you need to have your signal on. And so I get my kids on me all the time about that.
Well, apparently, according to the Supreme Court, they have ruled that when you are in the left-hand lane, even though everybody knows it's a left-hand lane, you still have to have your signal. But why? Because everybody knows you're there, you're making the left. Who are you giving indication to?
To oncoming traffic.
But the oncoming traffic knows that you're in that left-hand lane, right?
Actually, you know who I'm more worried about? I'm worried about the people who throw their signal on and drive 3 miles straight down I-5 and never turn. And you just have no idea which direction they're going to go. That's who I'm more worried about.
You do know the direction they're going to go. Eventually, they're going to go left at some point.
You never had that person that have the left-hand signal on,
and then
they make a right in front of you?
There is that, okay. Yeah. And my dad always told me that don't trust anybody. So, like, you're driving, you're going to make a – you see somebody's got their signal on. You're thinking, oh, they're going to turn in here and then I'm going to pull out.
Exactly.
He said, don't ever trust. Just so the signal's on doesn't mean they're turning. The thing is still on and still clicking away.
I tell my kids all the time, my oldest who's driving now, I said, it's like football. You got to keep your head on a swivel because somebody is not looking and you need to look out for them.
I have gotten so tired of that cliche, the head on a swivel.
Well, obviously, John, you've never been hit before then.
No, I've been hit, but like, oh, but in a car?
In a car, on a football field?
Trust me, you get hit on a football field. Head on a swivel. All right.
You know what I'm talking about.
I got it. So Supreme Court says have your turn signal on. There you go, everybody. Have it on more often. All right. You're going to stop seeing those lime green bites on the Seattle streets. Here is why. There's a whole bunch of them, and then they have decided that they're going to go away for what? Just a little while and then come back again?
That's what they said. I think they're trying to bring in the scooters that the same company owns scooters, but... those bikes are horrible. They're all over the streets. The homeless are making them into Chihuly statues, taking wheels off of them, mm-hmm. modifying them. You told me you never seen a modified bike.
No, I've never seen. How'd you describe it? And we both laughed at you.
They're these hybrid bikes.
Monster hybrid bikes
where the homeless take a bike they probably stole from somebody.
Uh-huh.
And they take those and they just make their own little bike and they ride around town.
Great big thing like they do at the Fremont Parade?
No, nothing that elaborate, but they'll take the wheels off. or they'll take the battery out and use it, and they just it becomes just a tool for them.
Okay, so what do they do with the battery when they take it out?
They take the battery and they take little lights, LED lights, and they use them to light up their tents or light up the area. You know, so, you know, it's multi-useful.
So the green ones apparently are easier to steal than the red ones.
From what I see the green ones' wheels missing down where I work. They're just pieces all over the place.
Yeah.
The red ones seem to be more sturdy and they seem to be used a lot more, but the green ones are just pieces. You see them on the side of the highway.
Right.
It's just a waste.
As I said, that's why we can't have nice things. So they're going to take them all away. The green folks that make the Green Line bikes say we're taking them away for a little while because this is normally the time most people don't ride them.
Yeah.
You will be seeing them again, but other people believe that what they're going to do is they're going to transition out those bikes and go with scooters. It is amazing to me, I guess they have it all worked out on paper somehow, that how many bikes they can lose, mm-hmm. how much money they can charge, what their sort of fixed cost or sunk cost is on the
bike.
So when the scooter comes along, won't it be that much easier for homeless people to take that scooter and do stuff with it?
Probably. But the point is getting more people riding the scooter. You'll probably get more people using the scooter than you do the bike.
Which some people have a problem with because you can't ride that scooter on the sidewalk.
They haven't come to that problem. They haven't resolved that problem first. You can't ride the bike on the sidewalk neither.
Well, I do. I've had ridden it on the sidewalk because it was too clunky and too slow, and so I was on the sidewalk with it. People don't seem to have a problem with it on the sidewalk. Do you notice that?
Do you notice that they do?
I don't, because I'm going by them, but I also notice that I don't necessarily want to be out there on the road on that bike in front of everybody because it just, it's only what the thing handles. I rode it all the way down to the CenturyLink Field, mm-hmm. and I took video of it and sent it to Jacob. And I've gotten into this thing where I send Jacob video and stories and stuff.
Yeah.
Now I have become the annoying texter. He doesn't write me back. Hey, here's a video of me doing this.
Oh, how does that feel, John?
Feels a little weird.
Oh, okay. A little weird.
A little uncomfortable.
A little uncomfortable.
Well, the thing is, I'm like the boss. He's like he works for me. Don't equate us. That's not the same thing. You and I are
this
friends.
This is a person over here.
You and I are friends. He's an employee.
This isn't a person over here.
He works for me. He works for the show. I send him something. He's
outside
right back.
Of work.
That's funny.
Oh, outside
that's
of
great.
Work. Oh,
that's
paying him for that.
That's this all I want back.
This is helpful to me that you just want some validation.
Something like hey
of what I think of what you send me.
Well, people do it really fast. They just hit the text and said so and so thinks that's funny.
Yes, but sometimes John, you send me things that seem like you want to have an argument.
No, I don't want to.
Oh, really?
Not an argument.
They're like Wall Street Journal articles about like the economy or whatever.
I'm not looking for an argument.
I thought we talked just, about being sincere, John.
No, that's not insincere. Okay, I'm gonna sit down. That's good. That's glad we're bringing this up now, since nobody's listening. The article was all about the people in the bottom 25% have benefited the most from this economy, and I have told Tom this over and over.
Show me how I benefit.
Oh, I don't even know. Okay, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, John.
I'll send it to you next.
Yeah. My understanding of the headline was that they're making more than their managers. Not necessarily that they're benefiting the most of everyone in the economy, but that they are making more than the managers.
As the percentage of those that have gone from wherever they are to wherever they are now, they have had the greatest percentage increase. And it shows you on the little scale, in 2016, 2017, whoosh, went straight up. So, and I have heard the Democrats stand up on that stage, and they're describing this, you know, dystopia of how horrible it is, and the middle class is getting killed, and no one's making any money, and only the rich people get richer. And I find this article, and I'm like, well, look at that, and they got all the stuff to back it up. So I just send it to Jacob saying, hey, here it is. This is what, and he's supposed to file it away. Now, here's why. You file it away, because if I'm in a conversation with Tom and I bring it up, then I can go, hold on, Tom, and I can turn to Jacob, and Jacob can go, yes, rather than me saying to Andrew,
oh, so
hey,
basically,
Google
that you want a yes man.
No. I just need a file guy. I don't want to send Jacob in there. Hey, Andrew, will you Google wages, bottom 25%?
Oh, John, that sounds like first world problems there. You need a file guy, buddy.
Yeah, he has
you
to.
You can't keep it yourself?
No, because I need a second guy, because Tom just always assumes that I'm just making this stuff up. Jacob is the guy you go to. He's like the guy that clarifies.
Oh, so
everything.
You need Jacob for credibility.
Absolutely. I understand that. All right, glad we carried all that. Are we still on the air? Is this thing on? Joe Biden says that he would comply with the Senate subpoena, reversing course, because earlier, I think the day before, he said he wouldn't. He's not going to do it because it's not the right thing to do, or at least it's not something he thinks he should be involved in. Do you have the sound of this thing by any chance there, file guy?
We're talking about Joe Biden, right?
Joe Biden, yeah. Where is he? There he is right there. Okay, here he is. So this is Joe's original comments responding. So there was some thought that, hey, if they subpoenaed you, would you go and testify there in the Senate? Don't forget the same thing. This is what Donald Trump is being accused of, not allowing his people to go and respond to subpoenas. So here's Joe's response.
Do you stand by your earlier statements that you wouldn't comply if you were subpoenaed to testify in an impeachment trial before the Senate?
Correct. And the reason I wouldn't is because it's all designed to deal with Trump doing what he's done his whole life, trying to take the focus off him.
Doesn't that position you as if you're defying a subpoena, putting yourself above the law?
Well.
Okay, is he going to say look, listen, or hey, it's not a joke, or no joke?
Look.
Ah! Got to look at him. Okay.
The grounds for them to call me would be overwhelmingly specious. But so I don't anticipate that happening anyway.
Okay, so he's basically saying the same thing that Donald Trump said, and then the next day they go, ooh, this doesn't look good, Joe.
No, sorry, John.
Oh, that's
this is
the heckling
thing. Yeah, yeah.
So the second part, which we don't have on tape, is where he says, listen, I want to just address what the question was asked yesterday. Yes, if they did subpoena me, yes, I would go before them, and yes, I would answer the questions that they have.
Well, the reality of the situation is you're talking about next day, Joe. Every day, everything's different with Joe, right? So everything he says is scrutinized. So, of course, he's going to try to correct the path back to his narrative. And that's what he was doing there.
But you have how Joe really feels the first time. And then after he realizes I probably should have said that, I left myself vulnerable and open, he then corrects. When you are the front runner, as Joe is, they will follow up on stories. And
Trump hasn't done the same thing?
Oh, Trump has, but he's...
Okay, oh, and then you skip right over there.
No. Trump doesn't... Trump doesn't change anything. He just says something crazy, like it was a perfect phone call, and then he sticks with it and keeps saying it over and over and over again. You hardly ever see him. In fact, that's what I always say to him. Can't you ever admit that you were wrong? He's like, no, I can't remember the last time I was wrong. I'm never wrong. He's like a cartoon character with that. Joe goes back and forth and thinks about it and then realizes, oh, I'm leaving myself vulnerable there, so I'll make a correction.
So he can't admit he's wrong. It sounds familiar, John, right?
Oh, that's not... No, oh, no. I see, young. I mean, here I'm being heckled just like Joe Biden.
I'll tell you what.
This would suck to be Joe Biden. Yeah. He's there in some public appearance there in New Hampshire, and the people just stand up screaming this stuff at him.
Well, wait. I released 21 years of my tax returns. Your guy hasn't released one. What's he hiding?
Do you do the heckle thing like at a comedy club? Do you do that kind of stuff?
Or if you're not willing to accept what's going to come back at you. I mean, the reality about this impeachment thing, I treat it like football. I treat everything like football.
Yeah.
It's just like you have, you know, President Trump playing quarterback me. Everything's me,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And he stepped over that line.
Okay, true.
Okay?
Yeah.
But instant replay is going to say, well, we don't have enough to show that he really stepped over the line. 1st and 10, let's go forward. And that's how it should be. I don't agree with this impeachment, but the reality of it is we all know he stepped over that line. Did he step over the line that makes it impeachable? No.
Yeah.
But you have the Democrats who are pushing that, and that's not helping them. The reality of the situation is they need to take their time, figure out who is a candidate, and to come up with a real plan, because the American people, whether Republican or Democrat, are just tired.
Yeah. Okay, I'll use a sports analogy on this as well. My dad had season tickets to the 76ers, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I loved watching play basketball because of his immense size, but he's also incredibly skinny, and it might have been Moses Malone, I forget who it was up against him, but he was getting his ass kicked all over the court. I mean, it was brutal the way they pushed him around. Mm-hmm. Okay, and eventually, at one point, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar comes down, and they're not calling any fouls. And it was so obvious. And he's doing the hands, and they're like, what? What does it take? How can't you start calling some of these fouls? And they're just pushing. Finally, at one time, he turns around. The guy doesn't call the foul. So Kareem takes the basketball and throws it at this other guy. The guy ducks, misses it, comes up, and bounces off the chair in front and hits my brother in the head. And the only reason I remember this moment was I said to Chuck, don't cry, whatever you cry. If you cry, they won't put us on the big screen. I just wanted to be on the big screen there at the Spectrum. I'm like, Chuck, don't cry.
This has nothing to do with the story. He needs to be on the big screen.
I got you. I want to get a big screen. But I remember later on talking to my dad about it. And my dad said there were so many fouls that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar felt were not being called that when finally there was one called or something, or at least something, he went into that one that it had broken the camel's back.
Yeah.
I am not defending the phone call to Ukraine.
Yeah.
But you have a president of the United States who is getting all of these, what he feels as if assaults against him not being called as fouls, not being like leveling the playing field on the thing. So I'm just saying we could disagree with it, but he believes going into that phone call that Ukraine was involved and Russia was involved and that was this and this and that and this and that. And he doesn't necessarily give a whole lot of thought to different things. He's acting purely on
impulse.
But
when he gets the facts, he never follow through with that.
Right. Well, he chooses.
And that's the issue.
He picks
Ronald Reagan and President Bush, both Bushes. I supported them.
Okay.
For the reason that when they made a mistake, they did come around and acknowledge that. And that's the difference.
Right.
We have a president who's not acknowledging when he makes a mistake.
Absolutely. Listen, that's part of his pathology, but it's also what allowed him to be able to say, listen, vote for me. And even if you hate me, you got to vote for me anyway, because the other choices are so absolutely terrible. There is the don't read another top 10 list. Apparently, according to QZ, this is the time where you have top 10 lists on everything, especially with this ending the decade. You know, top 10 songs, top 10 excuses people give for being late to a meeting, top 10. And I always say to Jacob, first of all, Jacob, why didn't you respond to the text message I sent you? A funny photo of me holding a rifle. There's that. Did you write me back on that one?
That one I did. You said you got a gun for Christmas, and I said you'll shoot your eye out. It
right.
was a classic.
Okay.
Yeah,
and we sort of that was okay. Good on that. now you say, Jacob, we're not doing any list stories. I hate lists. Hey, top 10 songs of 2019, counting down number 8. It's like no one wants a list of anything. So in this case, what they're suggesting to people is don't read other people's lists. Make your own top 10 list. What for the decade, or at least for the year? What's supposed to be on that list?
Music.
Your own list.
Music, movies.
And then what do you do with it?
You're supposed to share it.
No. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
You share it with your personal friends and your family. So people that do care about you, that would care about this thing.
Get out
no
of here.
No one cares about that.
Nobody cares about that. No one cares about anybody's list.
John, what's your list?
What list?
I don't care.
Well, see, exactly. My top 10 list, a top 10 movies, a top 10 this, a top 10 that. Who cares about it? All you can go is, that made my list too.
Yeah.
And then where's the relatable part of it?
No, I'd be curious. This is the idea is that it creates some type of intimacy that you you share specifically what it was about these things that were meaningful to you, and then you share it with, again, like your close friends or your family,
uh-huh.
presumably people that you do. Let's say your children. Do you not want to know what they enjoyed this year? The top 10 perhaps songs or movies that they watched that they liked?
Not really.
Perfect. All right. More rat coming at you. What is this one, by the way, Andrew?
Body Talk from the 86.
Talk it up. All the way to the post. Keep going.
I don't know where the post is.
Keep talking. time and tip.
It's Skyro Radio.
I don't like feeling. Make snow in the city. Showdown's blown out. You're not going to be. Feeling your life out in my underground. Body Talk. I see your body talk.
More rat coming at you, everybody. Skyro 97.3, all the hits. 48 degrees, 10:33. Starling can't think of anything to say, waiting for the post to come up on Rat. How you doing in there, Andrew?
Doing just fine.
Yeah. Doesn't count as the post. Hey, American Red Cross, got a blood draw coming up to St. Monica's out there in Mercer Island. Hit on how they're giving the blood, saves some lives. 10:33, here's some Rat. 49 degrees now. Rachel Bell. Rachel Bell, how are you?
Hi. I wish I could raise the temperature 1 degree like Rat did in just a moment. What a magical power.
Michael Shue Casino knows it's a good bet that whenever Rachel Bell's around, it's going to be something entertaining and informative.
That's right. I'll tell you about the time I met all the members of Rat tomorrow.
All right.
Did you know there's two T's?
Yeah, we knew that.
Oh.
By the way, so did Jacob, and he doesn't know how he knows that. What actually happens to your stuff when you take it to a thrift store? And how hard is it to clean someone else's house after they pass?
Boy, yeah.
You're going to try to combine both of these stories?
Holidays are over, baby. We're getting in deep. It's all sad news from now on. So journalist Adam Minter, he wrote a new book called Secondhand Travels in the New Global Garage Sale. And he was inspired to write the book because when his mom passed away, he was responsible for cleaning out her house, which so many people are. And when he was finished, he thought, ugh, all of this stuff, I'm inspired to own less. I don't want my children to have to do this for me. And I think everybody who has that experience of cleaning out a home has those thoughts. But not everybody goes around the world to try to figure out what happens to stuff that goes to the thrift store. So he says, number one, the thing you should know is only about a third of the things that are donated actually get sold in the store. One of the problems is we buy so much junk that can't be resold because it won't last, like IKEA furniture, fast fashion that doesn't hold up, and even stuff that is too heavy, like big oak tables and Lazy Boys. They say nobody wants to buy it from a thrift store because they can't fit it in their car. Uh-huh. It's too heavy. So that stuff either goes to the landfill or it goes to foreign markets. But I think so many people, when they drop something off at the thrift store, they're like, wow, I am a great person. I am saving the world, like so virtuous. Uh-huh. But you're not. You just need to stop buying so much stuff. So he said, the foreign markets, a lot of the unsellable stuff goes to Ghana and Nigeria, which is actually really great because what they do is they actually fix stuff. So he said there are as many electronic fix-it stores on the corners as there are Starbucks in Manhattan. They're out there fixing our old cell phones, the TVs, and they're selling them at prices that people can actually afford.
And so you...
Oops, I'm trying to play a little cut here. Okay, Andrew! No. Oh, can you hear it?
No, fix it for me.
Let's see. Fix it. I hear it coming out somewhere.
I'm just going to play this and get rid of you. Thank you, Rachel Bell. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. That's a fascinating bit of information. App got it? Yes? See, this is the exciting part about radio when Rachel comes in.
Yeah. You never know what's not going to play.
Play that cut for us now, would you, Arbel?
Okay.
Jacob?
Wow, it's going to be worth it.
Any rat songs that you want to play for us while we're waiting for Rachel? Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, you ever gone to this now where you go to show somebody a photo off your phone, but it takes you forever to find the photo, and by the time you find the photo, the person has lost interest or doesn't know? Red button allows you to broadcast. Here we go.
Jacob has to play it for me. Well, it seems like the reason people don't get things repaired is because they can get a new one for about the same price. So what can we do about that in our country if that's the way that things have kind of moved on to?
Well, right. You're absolutely correct. You know, in the book, I make a couple of suggestions. One is something that's starting to be done in Europe, and that is something called durability labeling. Manufacturers know generally how long their products are designed to last. So what's been tested out in Europe is this idea that the manufacturers should be required to just put a tag on new products saying how long something is supposed to last. And what they found, and there have been very good studies on this, that if you give consumers that kind of information, they're going to oftentimes buy the more durable, longer-lasting product, even if it costs marginally more. The other thing that we could look at is something called a right to repair law. The idea is that companies that make stuff should have to make all of the repair manuals available online and to anybody who wants it. Right now, if I put, say, a repair manual for my iPhone on the internet, I can be sued for copyright violations.
Yeah. So the problem is we have too much stuff and we have too much crap and we don't get anything repaired.
Have you ever had to go through somebody's closet that's passed away? It's a weird feeling.
No, I haven't.
You ever done that?
Yes.
Jimmy Tucker? Yeah. Suing you, what's your normal, as you open the door of the house, do you have a game plan in place? And then does the game plan change as the afternoon goes on?
I passed that on to my dad.
What do you mean? You make him do it?
Well, my grandmother passed away and that whole issue.
Yeah.
I just stepped away from that and allowed my dad and my aunts and uncles to handle that.
Okay, so they went in there and they were going through it, saving stuff?
Just went in, I grabbed my grandmother's Bible, and I grabbed three pictures of my grandmother, and I stepped back and let them handle the rest. It's a lot to go through because you're going through emotional things. You're going through connections with someone you loved and you lost. So, you want to hold on to a lot of stuff, and you really realize you can't do that. So I took what I felt comfortable with, and I just moved on with that, and I just allowed other people in my family to resolve that issue.
And then how many times have you looked at that Bible or those three photos?
Actually, my son has the Bible, and I keep those photos with me. I have a photo of my grandmother. It's just, it, it keeps that memory going. It's like, I don't remember her voice, but I remember her laugh.
Uh-huh.
And so to me, just having that little piece of her is something that sticks with me rather than trying to consume everything that she had. That was just too overwhelming for me.
Well, now a lot of baby boomers, I think, are being more aware and actually saying, you know I'm going to die and talking about it. So it sounds like a lot of people are actually being more considerate and scaling down as they get older, knowing that their kids are going to have to go through their homes and trying to make it easier for them.
To be able to get rid of stuff now.
Yeah, so that they don't have like this big house to break down, that they've already gotten rid of stuff. They've moved into a condo. There's no crazy storage unit somewhere. That's what Adam Minter said, too. He said, in this country, we have so much stuff that so many people have storage units. He said, in some parts of the U.S., you pay more per square foot for the storage unit than you do for the apartment that you're renting.
A lot of the clients I work with, Rachel, they have storage. One senior person I work with, she had several storages.
Yeah.
And she actually broke it down, and she lives in a senior living facility, but she has several storages, which she's paying, which equals more than what she's paying for the facility.
Right. And if you put $1,000 worth of stuff inside the storage unit, as soon as you are spending more than $1,000, you are now wasting money because you are now saving. You're spending more money to save something that was only worth $1,000.
Yeah. It's so hard to keep things out of the house. For example, with just the holidays happening, I actually don't want all of the things that I was given. And I don't want to be ungrateful, and I don't want to complain about the things I'm getting. But I think so many people gift for the sake of gifting because it makes them feel good, or they feel guilty they have to give a certain amount. And I don't have space in my house to bring in all of these things, and I don't actually want all of the stuff. But how do you tell your family or your friends or your partner's family that it's too much?
Let me ask you this, because before you got here, I had mentioned as we came out of commercial break that I have given the gift of Zero Res, which is a carpet cleaning service that Ursula talks about.
And it's like an experience instead of a stuff.
To someone I know. Yeah. And then Jimmy Tucker said, that's Jimmy right there. He said that's really what a horrible insult to give somebody that. You're basically saying, hey, I stopped by your house the other day and the carpet is filthy and I have a carpet cleaner come into your house.
Well, you mentioned that they have dogs, right?
I think they have a dog. That's the only way to explain the mess.
Freudian slip there, the mess.
I hope they have a dog. Yeah, let's just say they have a dog.
Then I think it's a nice present.
Okay, let's say they don't have a dog.
Then they are disgusting people.
Okay, so then...
I don't know. You have to frame it up. Like, how are you framing it up that you're giving them this carpet
cleaning? Well, it's going to be a surprise. They're coming between, like, 10 and 1 tomorrow.
Oh, that's so, even worse.
See, I know. You're giving the gift of making someone wait for the cable guy to come.
No, they are not. They're not.
Congratulations. I'm here to clean your carpet because John thinks it's disgusting.
No, I've done it anonymously. This might be my new thing where I just have
it's anonymous?
Yeah, anonymous.
Wait, but you told them that they had to be home, right?
Well, no, I knew they're going to be home because they're not going to work tomorrow. Because are you working? No, I'm taking the rest of the week off.
So now somebody in their friend group think their house is horrible.
Well, they're not going to know. That's going to be the part of it. It's like what's a gift? And it's like, hey, look at that. Somebody showed up. Don't know who it was, but one of my friends gave me this great gift of Zero Res. There's no chemical residue left behind.
Is Zero Res going to tell them that?
They don't know.
Zero Res doesn't know.
Well, I'll get in touch with them and say, listen, you know, don't say who this came from.
This is like
a little gift. It's going to be like my thing in 2020. I'm going to go around and clean people's carpets.
They can vacuum your name into the carpet. And so when they look down from above, John Curley.
No, they don't leave it. It leaves no footprints behind. It's like, you know, just take only memories and Zero Res. It's like when I used to give people cows and chickens for Christmas through that Oxfam thing. Mm-hmm. And then I reread that article that when people receive, by the way, a cow by the name of, you know, whatever was in your name has been sent to some place. Apparently, the people
sent
that,
where?
Wherever they said, Nigeria or whatever. Apparently, it doesn't even mean anything to the people. Well, like,
we named a constellation after you.
Yeah, same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That people, when you actually get more out of giving cows and chickens than the person who has received the cow and chicken in their place. I think it's different when it comes to carpet cleaning. We'll see.
I would take a chicken if you gave me one, but you've never given me a gift ever.
But in the end, it's all about you, right?
Yes, everything's about you.
That's what I thought.
Here's some more rat coming at you.
Two T's.
Explain this one, Andrew.
It's about love.
By the way, Jimmy Tucker is one that chose Mullet Monday. I didn't realize you're a Rat fan. That's spelled with two T's.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. There's a lot of things you don't know about me. Friend.
Oh, God. Remind me to write him back right away next time he writes me so he doesn't keep doing this to me.
As we already established, if you don't write him back, Jacob, you know how he feels.
No. It's just, it was New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve. I was having a good Christmas Eve. You fired in some depressing thing to me, and I didn't want to.
It wasn't depressing, John.
Oh, my mom. Boo.
I said, Merry Christmas.
And then it went depressing, and I thought, I don't want to write back right away. I was in a good mood. Here's some more Rat coming at you. You write to us. We'll write you back. Right to us at mynorthwest.com. Text us well at 98973. So a reporter is live on the air, and I haven't seen it yet, but is she in the middle of sort of, is she scratching the thing, or is she peeling it off, and she finds out that she's won the lottery? Is that how it works out, Jacob?
They announce the numbers, and that's when she realizes that she's also won.
Okay, so on the set, she's there, and then she's got the number that she's playing. Has she told anybody that she's going to have the number and she's going to be checking it, or just happens to be just sort of...
She just happened to be checking the number with everyone else.
And
the
then
show.
She decides, you know what? I am so excited. By the way, this is all in Spanish. I get mañana. That's tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. She's not coming in tomorrow. Something like that.
No trabaja tomorrow.
Yeah.
So the good thing for her is she gets a chance to realize. She says, "Oh my gosh, I've won! I'm not coming into work anymore. I'm not no more work because it's I've hit the lottery."
Hit the lottery.
And then what's sort of the second part of the story?
Well, when she checked the ticket, she was not the only winner. She was one of what 400 winners. So basically, I think it was like $500,000. Came down to $5,000.
So did she ask for her job back now that she only won $5,500?
Tuck her tail between her legs and come out the next day and apologize and ask for her job back.
Would you have given her the job back?
Actually, I would have given her the job back just to see her face and how she would explain this to the people. Yes.
She did not in any way say anything nasty like, you know, screw you and screw them. I'm out of here.
No.
Okay. Yeah, if she had gone that way and said, you know what, I'm never going to work for a jerk like you. And she tore a bunch of people apart because she'd won the lottery. She just thought she'd won more. Yeah. Since she didn't sort of mess up the bed, then therefore she was allowed to come back. I was when there was a weatherman in Grand Junction, Colorado. There was a guy at KREX, and there's KJCT. Those were the two stations. That's all we had in Grand Junction. Didn't have three networks. And the guy got a job in some other city, which you're always trying to get out of that small market to get to the next job. And he said, hey, this is my last weather forecast here on KREX. So I thought I would do, rather than doing the forecast for everybody, because it's going to be 92 and sunny like it's been for the last 6 months, I'm going to do my elephant imitation. And with that, he proceeded to do like 4 minutes of an elephant. No, like 30 seconds is enough when it comes to an elephant, right? But he would do the trunk thing. It was pretty good elephant, but not for three minutes. And he'd walk around, and he kept doing it in front of the map, and then he'd do over here and do over there. And they cut away to the anchors. I thought it was really funny. The news director took the tape, sent it to wherever it was that he got a job. Cincinnati saying, just want to let you show you the type of people that you have hired. And guess what?
He didn't get the job.
No, he went to Cincinnati, then went on to New York. He's a big famous... No, he didn't get the job. He ended up rescinding the offer from him.
Hey, be careful what bridges you burn.
That's right. 3 minutes of an elephant is too much. Right back.